It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Alright. You smell weird.
What?
I don't know, you came in, there's a smell with you. Like a weird mint smell or something.
Okay.
It's odd.
I smell weird. Hello. That's the first time you've ever said that. Yeah, all
that's,
this time.
I feel like that's the first time I've ever commented on your scent.
Yeah.
Since we've known each other.
Yeah. It's probably not the first time you wanted to or thought about it.
I don't know. I don't know that I put a lot of conscious thought into your scent.
Yeah, why today?
Overall? It's a good question. It is a thought-provoking question. I don't mean good in the sense that it should have been asked ever. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that technically is still considered an active crime scene by the Denver Police Department.
Yeah, that tape is always in the way when I come here. I've never said anything about it, but...
And I feel like jurisdiction issues should apply, but whatever. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 191.
191.
Yep.
What is wrong with us? For those of you just joining us ever... What is wrong with us? We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People who are awesome and cool and hip and with it, as the kids say, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little things, little questions, comments, topics, that kind of deal. The hat on its own magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its somewhat loyal servants, draw out those little note cards at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show.
And we have a new episode every Thursday.
We have never missed a Thursday in 191. I shouldn't jinx it. The house could explode before we post this one. If you're hearing this, we've never missed one in 191 weeks.
Not since St. Patrick's Day.
Of 2011?
11, yep. Mm-hmm. Every single Thursday since then. Go back. Go to the blog.
I was unemployed when this started. That explains a lot.
Yeah, you were. You
that explains that? A whole lot.
Go to the blog.
The only time I do anything is if I don't have a job.
At themagicaltalkinghat.com. And go clear back to the beginning, and you'll see that every single Thursday since St. Patrick's Day 2011, There has been a new posting.
I've never managed to fix our feed thing so that iTunes ever gives you more than the last 10. But if you actually go to the blog, they are all there.
All of them are there.
I do not recommend going back to the beginning, because we were sad.
I don't know. I think they picked up pretty quickly, and... We've had some pretty sad ones in the last year,
that is
too,
true.
For that matter.
Really, so. I do not recommend anybody listen.
Well, yeah, that's what we usually say.
But if you do, we appreciate that, and we love you guys.
We do.
And I love, every once in a while, I feel like somebody's fallen off the map, and then it turns out they're just behind, and they start commenting again.
You're talking about Beth, aren't you?
Beth this time. Mark a few times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Craig a couple times. Azhatalin a couple times. Currently, Blood Sparrow. I'm worried she's dead. I don't know what the heck's going on there.
She's not dead.
But we'll see. But they keep coming back. There's some I think we've lost for me. Even Stu came back not long ago. That was weird. Anyway, so how long has it been? 4 weeks? 12 weeks? Something?
I think it's just
feels like it's been a long time.
Two.
All right, two. How are your 2 weeks?
Well, you know, there was Halloween, which was awesome. And
I had a good time, too. We went up to Cedar Evans. Jen, you remember Jen? You've met Jen.
Yep.
Had us and Don and Cheryl and the Cheneys and Kim and JJ. Remember from Guy's Feast old days?
I don't know.
And we all got together. And it was very neat. We all had dinner. And I was very keenly aware that this group of people totally could have had dinner like 5, even 10 years ago. And the it just would have been a very different meal. Still would have been a good meal. Had great conversation. But like something about the whole interaction just reminded me how much older we've all become.
Mm.
But it was a good time. And late, too. We didn't get home till like midnight. It was kind of crazy.
That's cool.
I'm sorry, you're Halloween.
Oh, well, we didn't. I mean, all we did this year, besides having a big meal like we usually do for Halloween, we have almost a Thanksgiving type thing. I don't know if I've ever really explained it that much on the podcast, but
I think it's come up in the past.
Because, you know, when I go home for Thanksgiving, we really have to, like, prepare all of our food and then transport it there. So we don't really experience Thanksgiving the way most people do. The closest we have to that is we have a similar kind of feast type thing on Halloween night. So we did that, which was nice. And we watched the first season on DVD of Penny Dreadful.
Oh, the whole season's done already?
Yeah. And then you can get it on disc from Netflix. And have you seen it?
We saw the pilot and didn't care after that. We did not like the pilot very much at all.
Well, I can't say that the pilot... Well, I can't say the whole show really impressed me that much. But it was fun to watch on Halloween. I mean, you know, you just put it in and it's like 7 hours it's playing and you're doing other things. And, you know, we had... we carved jack-o'-lanterns the night before and we put those out. We didn't turn our light on for trick-or-treaters because... well, it's complicated. Part of it is because there aren't very many things that we feel clear of conscience to give out to kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of the candies that kids get on Halloween are not the kind of thing we would ever feel good to give them. And for a long time, we got little toys and stuff we would hand out. But we started to realize that kids these days, especially kids who live in our neighborhood, they're used to getting all kinds of fancy, expensive toys. So getting chintzy little things on Halloween. I mean, there are things that when I were a kid, I would have thought were awesome, you know. But these kids don't really care about them so much. So, you know, we just decided we would just, like I say, watch this TV show, and it was fun. We also started playing in the last 2 weeks, not for Halloween. We wanted to do it for Halloween, but the game we bought at Best Buy didn't work, so we had to order it. The game. Darksiders?
Oh, yeah.
Just the first one. I think there's two now.
There are two.
And that's been kind of interesting. That's been kind of fun.
I've heard it's good. I've heard it's a little, like, it doesn't bring anything new, but it does what it does pretty well.
Yeah, it feels like an arcade game.
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah, it makes me think of, I don't know if you remember this, but the PS2 had a version of Gauntlet.
Dark Legacy.
That felt very much like Gauntlet did.
And Gauntlet Legends, both of those, I think, were around back then.
And it really felt like the arcade version, you know?
Yeah.
And there are things about this one, I mean, it's got better graphics and everything like that, but there's something about it that feels very like an arcade game. And it not in a chintzy, cheap way, but kind of in a fun way. It's kind of hard to explain. But the other adult in the house, obviously, is playing it, and she really likes it. You know, I don't know if you realize this about the other adult in the house, but she's an avid gamer, really. I mean, she's a total gamer.
Well, I figured it out, because you never play any video games.
I mean,
so anytime you're talking about video games, it's watching her play, unless it's something you can call.
There are a lot of people who play video games who aren't, strictly speaking, gamers. But she, I mean, she's really a gamer, not just video games, board games. And she tried in her college days, maybe even high school, to do role-playing games because she really wanted to, but she ran into like sexist jerks,
you
know, who didn't want to, whatever. So I mean, if it had been up to her, that's something she would have done in college and might still be doing. So she really is an avid gamer, and she really likes this game, I think, for all the reasons any gamer would. So that's been kind of fun. And then driving over here, the full moon's out.
Gorgeous tonight.
That's nice. I like that daylight savings time is over and it's dark outside when I drive over here. That's fun. So yeah, I really love this time of year, as everybody knows. So that's what you were talking about going up to Cedar Rapids. That's the different thing for Halloween you were talking about before.
Yeah. Normally we stay here and do trick or treaters. Yeah. This year we bought a big bag of candy for trick or treaters. Because technically, we were going to go up basically. Trick-or-treating is from certain hours, and this was a late supper, so we were going to go up after that. But we just decided we didn't want to, so we bought this huge bag and ended up using like 6 pieces for the kids next door. Because we're always the first stop for the kids next door. We're basically their practice trick-or-treating every time. And we get to see the costumes and everything. So that we've had this giant bag of candy for no good reason.
But what about the rest of your 2 weeks?
Oh, lots of stuff. Okay, where's a good place to begin? All right, first, let's talk Constantine. Have you watched Constantine?
We watched the pilot.
All right, you didn't watch the second episode?
No.
Because you did not like it, or you just didn't get around to it, or forgot about it?
I think we decided after the pilot we weren't that interested.
Okay, after the pilot, I decided I absolutely, absolutely loved it.
Really?
I'm watching the second episode, I still love it. I understand there are quite a few people who disagree. I love it.
Well, we didn't hate it.
I'm getting into death threat Twitter fights over it with old friends of mine.
We didn't hate it. It's just like, yeah, this isn't really doing anything for me.
I really liked it. I really felt, and I still feel, that it's about what it's supposed to be about.
Well, now, and see, there...
And I'm so happy.
There's part of it. I've never been a fan of Constantine before, so...
Yeah, well, that would be a problem then, yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that has changed because it's... To make it a TV show and to make it a serial and all that kind of stuff. But it feels like it. And even... I mean, I don't want to spoil... But in the second episode, the resolution is really... Technically... We resolve things and sort of do the right thing, but he comes off looking like an asshole, which is how he is. it's treating it... I mean, there's still stupid stuff. Chaz is white and apparently American, and I don't... But that's because that's how things happen. I don't know. The girl from the pilot, just gone. Like, she's gone at the end of the pilot. I thought she was going to come back. No, she doesn't come back. We've got a totally different female lead that we're going to have the rest of the time, which is actually based on a real character from the Hellblazer books, whereas the one in the pilot, they made up just for the pilot. I feel like we're going to take that relationship in a weird will-they-won't-they way that's going to annoy the shit out of me. But, again, it's a TV show, so I don't know that I can get away with that. But it's giving me a run for its money. I did really like... the season premiere of Elementary, and so Elementary is still officially my favorite show, but this one I'm very excited about. I'm a little nervous because it's getting very mixed reviews, so I'm worried it won't stick around, especially because it looks like it's kind of expensive. The pilot really had a lot of special effects, but even the second episode, I don't think it's a real cheap show to make.
No, it's pretty slick. It doesn't look cheap or anything. And again, we didn't dislike it. It just didn't resonate with us. We didn't hate it. We just didn't love it.
If it goes on and I still like it, I may give up Sleepy Hollow because of it. Because they sort of hit the same niche, and I'm not really liking Sleepy Hollow this season as much. So we'll see. The video game, I'm now playing Fable 3. I forgot how into the Fable games I get.
Yeah, I remember how into them you get. You've been talking to me about Fable games since you played the first one.
Oh, my God. Well, here's the thing. I beat here's how often I beat video games, a given video game. I will complete it and beat it either 0 times, which is quite common.
Really?
1 time, which is also quite common, and rarely 2 times. And these tend to be exclusively...
You can play a good guy.
You can play a good guy or a bad guy, and even then, it's not all of those. In fact, the most common thing with those is I play it one way, and then I start a second game, and then never finish it. I'm pretty sure I beat the first Fable 5 times, so far. I really kind of want to get the anniversary edition. And I don't know why. People who criticize the games, I totally believe it. There's a lot of things to be wrong with. And mostly, Peter Molyneux always promises stuff and does not deliver. None of the games have ever been remotely as good as they were supposed to be. But they just, I don't know. I just get way the hell into it. And I'm way the hell into Fable 3. I don't know. I'm just digging it. I'm really digging it. So that's been fun. And saw a movie.
Yeah, we saw several movies. What did you see?
The Judge.
Don't know that one.
In the theaters right now, Robert Downey Jr. is a big shot lawyer who goes back to the small town he grew up in where his father,
played
by Robert Duvall, is a judge. Duvall, yeah. And then the judge may or may not have killed somebody with his car, and Robert Downey Jr. has to try and defend him. It wasn't my idea. I mean, I wasn't opposed to seeing it, but I wasn't particularly interested. Was the producer's idea. It is really good. Really good. It is really well crafted. It's a really good piece of film craft. It is well cast. It is impeccably acted. I'm kind of shocked because it has a not small cast. There's no weak point in the cast. And people like Robert Duvall and Vincent D'Onofrio, who are both incredible actors, who, let's be honest, have been phoning it in for the last few years, remind you in this film that they are incredible actors. Robert Duvall is Robert motherfucking Duvall, and you remember in this movie. And people that I'd never heard of who also did amazing jobs in it. Vera Farmiga is there. I think I'm just falling in love with her. I love her in everything she's in.
Yeah, I do too. But wait, she's the woman in the Bates Motel, right?
I don't know. I still haven't watched it. Maybe.
She's Norma Bates, isn't she?
I don't know. I haven't watched it. Maybe.
What else is she in?
I saw her in Up in the Air was when I first saw her.
Was she in...
I've seen her in a couple other things.
That movie was...
She's kind of on an upswing right now. She's kind of the new hotness right now.
Was she in that movie that Jake Gyllenhaal's in where he's going back in time and... God,
possibly. Source Code. I didn't see that movie.
Oh, yeah, so. Source Code.
But I've seen her in three or four things now, and I really adore her.
Her sister has been in two seasons of American Horror Story.
Oh, okay. And then, a couple other people who it turned out were like from theater and stuff, but did really good. And here's the thing for me. One thing I don't like, and I Trish and I have talked about this. Trish particularly thinks we should recommend it for you because as a piece of filmmaking, it's very impressive. For me, it's too good. There's just a slight hollow ring to it in that it's too polished. There's a lot going on in the movie. I cried during the movie. The producer cried during the movie, and we cried. They were two separate times. And, like, the scene I cried in, I was kind of mad because I knew they wanted me to cry during it, but I was still crying. And the whole thing just, I can tell, like, Hollywood made this, but they made it really well. But it still doesn't feel like a genuine filmmaker's vision or anything. But it's really well put together. It has been getting mixed reviews in some places. And the nature of a lot of the reviews, especially the negative ones, seem to be pushing Trish and I to liking it more because the reviews seem to really miss the point. Mm. So I'm going to explain this here for those who haven't seen it. This is not a courtroom drama. This is not really a courtroom movie. This is not a crime procedural. This is certainly not a thriller. This is in no way reminiscent of any John Grisham film ever. I don't understand why people thought this, because not only did I not get that impression from the movie, I didn't get that impression from the trailer.
I did not either. Every impression I get from the trailers is this is a relationship movie.
Yes, this is a dealing with family issues later in life movie. And dealing with a bunch of issues. There's dealing with issues that he moved away from home and all sorts of stuff.
Sure, sure.
And the courtroom, the crime that may or may not have been committed or whatever is absolutely just the hook to get people together and to get people talking. That is not the point of the movie. And if you go in wanting that stuff, it's not there. It's full on not there. We spend maybe 10 minutes of the 2-hour and 41-minute, by the way, movie in the courtroom. Maybe 10 minutes.
In other movies like this, the event is someone has died, or there's going to be a wedding, or there's some kind of reunion.
Well, actually, that still happens here. He technically goes home for a funeral, and as he's leaving, this other thing
That's almost always the case. A wedding or a funeral is always the big one. Or a will's being read or something.
But and that's a thing, too, by the way. 2 hours and 41 minutes did not feel like it. I wouldn't say it went by in a blink or anything, but I was not... I never had that, when is this movie going to be over, vibe, and I never was like, oh, God, this is so long. Which, for 2 hours and 41 minutes, I'm impressed, because nothing keeps me going that long. Like, that was crazy. So I would recommend it. I would recommend it specifically to you. There's no need to see it on the big screen particularly.
I doubt we will.
But it's a good piece of film craft. It's a really good piece of film craft.
Probably add it to our Netflix queue when it's out.
So that was nice. Also, do just want to give a little honorable mention to my gaming group this week. The last 2 weeks, actually, we missed one because a couple people were going to... Oh, I think they were visiting family or something. So we skipped 1 week. And then this week we were back, but one of my players was gone on business. So we just had three. Now, as you may have known in the past, sometimes when that happens, I do a little something called Southeast Missouri Voluntary SWAT Team. Did not opt for that this time. I came up with a different idea. We had just finished a major story arc in our main campaign. And so I told them, I said, we're still going to play the main campaign, sort of. What I did was I took the three remaining players, I had them get out their character sheets, I had them pass their character sheets to the left. They all played a different character, but each other's characters, basically. And I took them through a little adventure, and I told them there would be some continuity issues, and as far as their characters were concerned, they did not notice these. And they played through a really surreal, messed up adventure that involved nanotechnology spiders and space zombies, and freaked them the hell out. And then I ended it and informed them that they should make note of what had happened, because when the fourth player came back, we were going to explain to her that this was a dream she had. And none of the other characters would know anything about it. They were so relieved when I told them it was just a dream. It was pretty crazy. Also, a lot of us were kind of tired, so it came out especially weird. And coined a brand new phrase from one of my players that I still intend to get emblazoned on a t-shirt or something, who said, in character, here is your outfit, put it on in space. Yes.
There is something very humorous about that.
And I'll tell you, context doesn't help.
No, probably not.
except in to know that they were giving someone an outfit and wishing them to put it on.
Well, yeah, that's obvious.
And I mean, technically they were in space, like they were on a space station. But that's the part that gets weird, because there's no reason. And they weren't even, like they don't know why they said it. but yeah, I started them off by all evacuating their ship because it was going to decompress. And I said, what are you wearing and what are you taking? And one of them went out basically just in their underwear. And so while they were working on something else, the other one went shopping for them and brought them back, I believe, a unitard. And said, here is your outfit. Put it on in space. No comma, no period there. Put it on in space altogether.
It sounds like something a mom would say to her kid in some context that's kind of difficult to imagine what it would be, but...
Sounds like the shittiest sci-fi movie pitch ever. I did it a lot later. Anytime I told them stuff, I just added in space at the end. The weirdest... fortune cookie trope that in space in the end. I might like that better than in bed.
Maybe.
And every fortune cookie within space.
It's different anyway.
And pretty much that's how they made the fourth Leprechaun movies. Leprechaun in Space. Actual title of the film. Leprechaun 4 in Space. During the entire film, nobody says the word leprechaun.
Is that going to be the title of this episode, In Space?
In Space. But you got to put something before. It's just episode 191 in space. Possibly. Every time. Because In Space by itself is not a new. Like, that's the thing. In Space, you know? But I always go back to the source, which for me is Pigs in Space.
Yep.
Followed by a short jaunt over to Jews in Space. From History of the World Part 1,
yeah.
Preview of History of the World Part 2.
In space.
In space. All right. I think that's all I have to say, though.
I'm going to tell you the films I saw.
I saw Snowpiercer. Oh, I really want to see that. I don't expect to really like it, but I really want to see it.
Why do you expect not to like it?
I don't know. Something about it makes me feel like it's going to be... I have run real hot and cold with what I perceive to be indie sci-fi, and this feels like indie sci-fi.
Well, Jazz...
Even though it's got some big names.
Jazz saw it and wanted me to tell her when I saw it, and I forgot to tell her. So, Jazz, if you're listening, I saw it.
What do you mean, if you're listening? Jazz is practically hard hat number one at this point.
Let's see. No, it was good. It was a film that at some point while I was watching it, certainly when I was done watching it, I thought, this is probably a really good book. Probably a much better book than a movie. Not that the movie was bad, but you could... This is a book, if I read it, I would say someone could make a really good movie out of this that would still not do this book justice. And that's how it kind of felt.
I have experiences with some of those. They frequently get me to read books, which is nice. I had that actually with Golden Compass.
Mm-hmm.
Did not like that movie, but it made me really want to read the book.
Well, again, I think Snowpiercer was a fine movie. It was... But you just knew. Let's put it this way. If it wasn't based on a book, you'd think to yourself, this was a good movie, but it would have made a better... Yeah, it would have made a better book. And you get that sometimes. A couple movies I saw, we watched them because they featured an actor named Katie Lotz, who was in Arrow, in the first season of Arrow.
Okay.
What
role did she play?
She was Sarah Lance. And
give me a context. I don't remember the name.
Sarah Lance was, you know, in the... This isn't going to be a spoiler because this is like right in the first episode of the first season of Arrow. Oliver cheats on his girlfriend, Lauren. Lauren or Lorna, whatever.
They were on
Her sister.
Her sister who was on the boat.
And her sister Sarah.
Okay, so she plays the sister. All right.
Not in the pilot, though.
Oh, okay.
Later on...
The sister comes back in flashbacks or...
No, the sister...
Or a surprise that she's still alive.
Yeah, she's still alive and...
No, you could have made it ambiguous how she came back. I was giving you an in so you wouldn't spoil that.
No, that's...
Spoiler alert,
that's
sister's still
That's also
alive.
Not a big spoiler. I think that's also in the first episode.
No, I watched like 6 episodes of that. I didn't know that.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I thought that was pretty early. But anyway, it's a different actress and they like retcon her in. Like they'll show scenes of from the boat and everything with her in them. It's weird. But anyway...
It's like... Babylon 5 and Sheridan's wife.
Katie Lotz, and we thought she was really good. So we watched her first in a film, I think it was an independent, it was a sci-fi film, independent, I think, called The Machine.
Never heard of it.
Really good. It was a good film, and she was great in it. And then we watched her in a horror film, or thriller maybe, called, I don't remember what it was called. Although, if you look her up on Netflix, it's streaming also. Both of these films are streaming. Okay. The horror film was okay.
I'm way more likely to know the name of this one. I'm sorry you don't remember this
one. It was that one was okay, but it wasn't great, but it was worth watching. Another horror film thriller that we watched was Silent House with Elizabeth Olsen.
Oh, God. I didn't see that, but it's one of those movies that I read the Wikipedia stuff on. That's, I know the plot of that, and that's some heavy shit.
Well, what was interesting about the film, I didn't know anything about it before we started to watch it. And, but, you know, about 10 or 15 minutes into it, I'm going, this is still the first shot of the film.
Yeah.
And that was a thing, obviously. A lot of people who saw it or went to see it knew that was going to be a thing.
It's part of why I want... Actually, I should rephrase. It's the only reason I want to see the film The Russian Ark, which is also on Netflix, because it's an 84-minute film done in a single shot.
Well, now, my understanding from the people on the production, they talked about how what they did was they cheated a little bit. Okay. They would do 12 or 15... But it's 12 or 15 minutes? Yeah. I mean, holy cow, that's a long time to have one shot. And, of course, if you mess it up, you got to start all over.
And Russian Ark, actual one take with, like, hundreds of people, and apparently they had to start over like four times, and it was really bad.
But it was okay. I thought it was good. I read some things after we watched it, and a lot of criticism of it. But first of all, I thought Elizabeth Olsen did a fantastic job.
Elizabeth Olsen, apparently, I've yet to see her in anything, but she keeps getting lauded for everything she's in.
She was good. I mean, there were the two other guys in it weren't that great, but they weren't in it that much. But whatever little way they cheated to make it seem like the whole thing was just, well, not the whole thing. About halfway through...
Well, at some point, I think we go flashback or something.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, about halfway through, she goes through a door or something, and you're pretty sure, okay, they must have cut there. And there's one other time about, you know, three quarters of the way through that happens. But I guess if you're not paying close attention... It does look like one shot the whole way through.
Wow.
And
it's only in recent years I've come to appreciate that kind of thing.
Well, the thing is it what's interesting about it is because everybody's used to watching movies in a different way, not as one continuous shot. It's sort of consciously in my case, but I think unconsciously for most people, creates tension. Right? Because this thing keeps going and going and you know something else is supposed to be happening that always happens in movies, but it hasn't happened yet.
And in my mind, there's a...
So you feel...
I was going to say amateur feel to that, but tied to that is a very real feel to that. Like somehow this is a real thing.
Yeah, you get that sense, like it's really happening.
Yeah.
But also...
And I assume it's not a handheld... It's not shaky cam.
Well, sometimes sort of, it is, and is sometimes it? It's not. Okay. I mean, some... That's they're very careful to really mix up their camera styles, I guess you could say, but just the fact that it never stops, like it's constantly watching and moving and it never takes a break. There's some tension that is kind of in there, and I think part of it's you're not used to that.
Yeah.
You're not used to that gaze just staying, and also. Something that a lot of filmmakers don't put in their movies deliberately that they could, but like Albert Hitchcock was good at this, was pauses or, you know, the fact is, even in conventionally made films, having the camera linger somewhere for a while can be very effective in making you feel like uneasy. In Psycho, Hitchcock used that to great effect. Well, as you can imagine, in a film like this, where you're going to have one continuous shot, there's going to be a lot of times where that's going to happen. And of course, it really works. And so, but you still have to have a pretty good pace, or else it's going to start to drag. And the film didn't seem to do that at all. So when we were done watching it, we thought, well, that was really effective. And she was really great, but a lot of people criticized the other parts of the story, which I'll admit weren't like earth shattering or anything. But I mean, as a piece of film and as an experiment to do this whole single shot thing, I thought it was pretty good. And she did such a great job. I totally recommend it.
Did you ever see The Loneliest Planet?
No.
You really should. It's a very, if nothing else, it's a very experimental type of film, in my opinion. And I think you would find that very interesting. Has very little dialogue. Most of it lets the the scenery sort of tell the story, but it's lots of really long shots. Sometimes within dialogue scenes or whatever, shots that linger to create tension like you're talking about, and then other weird mood-setting shots where it's just one wide shot of people, because it's basically people hiking. There's a story in there, but it's people going on a hiking excursion. And there's shots where just for like 4 minutes, you'll just see them basically hiking from one side of the screen to the other side of the screen. And it has a very intriguing and very nuanced to me sort of plot to it, but very minimalist. And I think you'd find that very interesting. What else? Any others?
No, obviously I don't usually have a lot of movies to talk about, but we happen to see quite a few. This time in a whole first series of a TV show. We also tried to watch a TV show. We tried to watch the first season of The 100.
Oh.
That was mostly just amusing.
Yeah, like, you're already two strikes down when you're a CW sci-fi show. Although CW is the only people who are really trying to do it. But then somebody told me the premise, and I'm like, can you have four strikes? Because that's where you are now, because this sounds terrible.
Well, obviously it's someone who sat down and said, what can I do that's like the Hunger Games?
Yes, but not the Hunger Games.
Where you get some, you got to have some cool rationale for sending a bunch of teenagers down to a dangerous planet. Well, of course, there isn't one.
No.
I mean, that's the big weakness of Hunger Games, is that this would... whole populations of people would allow themselves to be slaughtered before they'd let their children go and play in a death match in some stupid game.
Also, anytime you just stick teenagers together by themselves, I hate everything in the world and try and kill myself.
Well, the idea here, which is terrible, is that because the Earth has been devastated by nuclear war, and the only people to have survived were people who were living in space stations. Now, yeah, they've come together into one big station without any explanation for how they can do that, by the way. And you know, because they're the only human beings left, their laws are very strict. So even their teenage offenders are locked away and are considered suitable people to send down to the planet when they don't know if it's safe.
Good cannon fodder.
No. That wouldn't
it's
happen.
So contrived.
That is so stupid. I mean,
and it's just an excuse to stick a bunch of teenagers into a Hunger Games scenario, and I'm like, which I would hate anyway.
So. They're the last human beings, and they're going to take their youngest and most fertile people and possibly send them to their deaths because they're criminals, supposedly? No.
Yeah.
No. That's ridiculous. That's the dumbest thing ever. And so they get down there, and you've got all these young adults, really, doing all these heroic adult things, and every once in a while talking about, well, I really got good grades in chemistry, so let me do this. You know, like they're still in high school.
Nice.
It's like, wow, this is so terrible. But the good thing about it was there were...
I don't think it got renewed for a second season.
No, it is. It's going on
really?
Right now. It's
oh
a second
God.
Season. That's what made us curious to look at it, because we kept seeing previews for it and the other shows we were watching. But the one good thing about it was a good number of female leads. In parts that were actually halfway decent. So, you know, that was fun. It's always fun to see them actually do good things with female lead characters. But other than that, it was just ridiculous.
We may be seeing all sorts of new shows now. So the producer read an article. Well, okay, I should back this up. The producer, I was in some training recently. I think I talked about it before, lean process. It's an organizational
thing. Yeah, you did talk about it a little bit.
Very much, but I was in it for a few days for like 4 hours a day. And so the producer, who normally can like talk to me in chat and send me emails and stuff, couldn't do that. And basically ended up sending me a series of emails that ended up being her basically having a conversation with herself, because she would send me something and then she would think of something new about it before I had finished my training. So she'd send another thing and then she'd change her mind and stuff. So all of this just shows up in my email when I get back one day. But so the producer reads a news thing about HBO is going to make a first party streaming service.
Oh,
so you don't have to have cable and you can get this. And she's like, I want that. That would be awesome. And it's going to be about $15 a month is what they're thinking. which they say is about the same price as getting HBO if you have cable. Hmm. And so she's like, when this comes out, we should totally get this. And then she's like, we actually have cable, and it's going to be like $18 to get that. And it comes with HBO Go, which is basically this exact thing already.
Right.
And she's like, maybe we should do that. And then she's like, yeah, you should just call the cable company and get us HBO. So we did. So now we have it, and we have HBO Go. And it's awesome because there's a lot of old stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Most of what I'm amazed about are TV shows that I wanted to watch that I haven't. So, like, all of True Blood is on there, of course. All of 6 Feet Under is on there. All of Deadwood, all of Carnival.
Ooh, yeah, Carnival's good.
But then there's crap like Extras, the Ricky Gervais comedy thing that I'd always heard about. I didn't know it was on HBO when it was in the U.S.
I've actually seen most of it. I liked it a lot.
And I always wanted to see that, and that's there. Now I'll be able to watch Silicon Valley because it's all on there. So very excited about that. Well, there's also a lot of movie options and just HBO channels. But So there may be a whole bunch of new stuff. So I'm even more trying to, like, not get into new TV shows. And the producers were gonna. The producer's given up on Gotham and is about to give up on Scorpion, I think.
Still watching Gotham. I really like what they're doing with Cobblepot. And, so I'm going to keep watching. There's a lot of things they're doing that don't make sense, but whatever. It's fun to watch.
Did you see that
Flash
I posted?
Flash is still good, I think.
Yeah, I'm honestly thinking about picking up Flash. Because nobody has anything bad to say about it.
It's not like A-grade TV or anything, but it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And a lot of people who I wouldn't even expect are watching it. Did you see where I posted about Dairy Queen?
Yes.
The actual... No, but I posted the actual context.
Yes, I saw it.
See, that's so much better that way. Now people know where it comes from.
Yeah, that's just great.
Okay, Dairy Queen.
And, of course, Election Day was this past week, so...
Yes, I don't want to talk about how that went because it didn't go very well. I do want to talk about two interesting things that come out of this.
What's that?
Missouri is now legal gay marriage.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Judge threw it out, and the governor says he's going to appeal, but based on the way it's been going, he's not doing a stay of licenses, so they're already putting him out.
Yep.
And my birth state, Oregon, apparently approved recreational use of marijuana.
So you're moving back?
I just can't figure out. This state can't get their shit... Well, maybe this explains it. I'm like, they can't bother to have you pump your own gas... They can't get a sales tax going. They're the last state without a fucking sales tax. But they got through medical marijuana. I mean recreational marijuana.
But not GMO labeling, though, right? Did that not go through?
I don't know.
I thought they were voting on that.
I don't know. I'm way more interested in the pot laws. No, we're going home for Thanksgiving, so who knows if all the dispensaries will set up shop by then.
You know what?
I was going to make jokes to my parents because Portland Airport is right on the border between Oregon and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Portland straddles that border. And so I was going to make a joke about how we had to just pop over the border before we drove down to them. But now won't even have to make that joke because it'll just be there.
Well, you know what I was thinking about for some reason during the whole election night? I was thinking about Chuck Grassley and that letter I wrote to his office about net neutrality.
Yeah.
And about how he answered about saying, well, you know, the internet's just like any place else. You know, you have to develop it and for businesses and stuff, you know. Which I talked about this very thing on the podcast once, and I said that I could tell this guy didn't know anything about the internet.
Yeah.
And I said something about him being old, which I felt bad about later because I don't actually think that if you're old, you by necessity don't know anything about technology.
No.
But I do think that that's his excuse. He didn't grow up with this technology, and he's not making any effort to know anything about it, even though he's a senator and should be doing that. So I wasn't trying to be ageist when I said that. But now, he's been senator in Iowa for a long time, and he was senator with a Democrat senator, Tom Harkin.
Yeah.
And when I was growing up, you often heard people say, if they were Democrat or Republican, that they were always going to keep voting in Grassley, and they're always going to keep voting in Harkin, for a couple reasons for that. One, the longer someone was in the Senate, the better their appointments were, the better committees they were on. And also, Democrats and Republicans both felt like it was good to have one of each party in the Senate.
And I kind of agree.
And I always thought, wow, that's, you know, that's pretty cool. But that's when I was growing up, when being a Republican and Democrat wasn't so divisive as it is now. Nowadays, people, there's just no middle ground. There's no thought about balance or compromise or anything.
Yeah.
And now, of course, we're going to have two Republican senators, which is amazing because a lot of people think of Iowa as a blue state.
There have been a few things like that this time around, yeah.
But it, I wouldn't call it that anymore.
Yeah.
Because Terry Branstad carried every county except Johnson County.
A
Republican governor.
And I hated the experience. I did reactionary voting again. I voted for the lesser of two evils in a whole bunch of cases, and I'm so tired of that. I'm so tired of being in a position where I hate both major party candidates, but I hate one so much more that I'm going to vote. And I did it, and I did it a few times in this ballot.
Yeah, yeah.
Not happy about that. I think they're mostly before I was old enough to vote, but I was old enough to understand what was going on, that if I could have voted, back then I would have been like, I'm comfortable saying I want to vote for this third party because it's not the end of the world if either of these candidates does it. But nowadays I'm like, no, biblical apocalypse happening. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that because that's all ugly. It's never as bad as you think. It's also never as good as you think when it comes to politics.
That's true. So. That's true.
We were getting phone calls that night.
Yeah. Us too.
They were calling, robot calls telling me the polls are still open for 2 hours. I was like, I will kill all of you with my mind. Oh.
Yeah, it was
so
pretty bad.
Angry.
It was pretty bad.
And I'm registered independent. And I was telling the poll person, I was like, I should really pick a party. Because back in the day, the independents were the ones who didn't get called. And nowadays, those are the ones that do. And she said, I really don't think it matters anymore. I think you're going to get these stupid calls no matter what. And I got weird-ass ones from places in Virginia telling me that Bruce Braley was going to come to my house with Obama to take my guns.
Also eat our baby.
Baby eating was in there. Yeah, it was weird stuff.
And that's what both of those things motivated you to actually vote for Bruce Braley.
No.
Baby eating, all right, come on over. No, Bruce Braley and Barack Obama.
Terrified.
Let's eat some babies.
I was terrified at the loss of my guns. Because I assumed they meant my biceps, which recently I've worked really hard to grow and strengthen.
Oh, man.
And also, there's really no way to interpret that, but that Bruce Braley and Obama are going to come in, they're each going to tear off one of my arms. And that's terrible. So,
what if they replace them with bionic arms?
Metal arms.
Yeah, the technology's really good now.
Like Hannibal Buress. Don't worry, I bought some metal arms. It's fine. Like Jax in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
You should have been excited.
Yeah.
All right. We have the technology. We can rebuild him.
We just don't want to.
How much? Six what? No, we can't do that.
It's not even an issue of cost. we had a conversation with him before this, and we're like, it's better this way. No, I'm sorry, ma'am. You probably loved your husband a lot, but the rest of us just agreed he's kind of a dick. And there's really nothing about him that says we should use this technology on him. So we're going to wait for a tragic accident victim who's nicer, I'll be honest. And we're going to turn them into a giant cybernetic powerhouse.
Just to see what happens.
If you could just sign this form, we'll give you the corpse and you can be on your way. Merry Christmas, by the way.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome.
All right, we don't have a lot of time yet left. We should probably actually draw at least one thing out of that.
That's so funny. Anonymous asks.
Anonymous frequently asks.
What are your deal breakers in a relationship? Is this a romantic relationship? What kind of relationship?
Well, I don't know. I would. I think I made the assumption it was a romantic relationship, but I don't think we need to make that assumption because of poor Mr. Jim McGregor. I think we can address it across the board.
Well, across the board, including romantic relationships, for most of my life, there was no such thing as a deal breaker in any kind of relationship.
Now,
didn't have them.
Meaning, I can interpret that two different ways. I can interpret that as each relationship is so unique and special that I can't make a rule like that. Or I could interpret that as this relationship, I won't break off this relationship no matter what you do.
It's more of a. I would like for other people not to treat my personal issues like deal breakers. So I'm not going to treat their personal issues like deal breakers. In other words, they got issues. I got issues. I will treat their issues the way I hope they would treat my issues. And it was, I just didn't really have, I mean, and I'm not just, again, not just romantic relationships, any type of relationship. It's just how I wanted to be treated. So that's how I treated them. I wouldn't say that's particularly true anymore because, I think it's probably still true for any casual or professional kind of relationship, for the most part. Although, you know, if I were working for someone, you know, if I had a job working for someone else, again, there are probably things that would make me leave that job or whatever. I don't know. I can't think of anything that's not personal, though, just, you know, professional, I suppose.
Yeah.
As far as a romantic relationship goes, though, if the person exhibits pretty much any amount of jealousy, because that was a really huge thing in my, you know, first marriage that I put up with for a very, very long time, I'm really not. It doesn't even matter what philosophically if I feel like, you know what, I'm going to try to understand that, work with it. I can't anymore.
Just,
I mean,
can't put up
with, yeah,
that.
I'm whatever that was that allowed me to deal with that for 10 years, I'm out of it. So yeah. It's not going to do them any good or me any good. I'm just going to have to say, look, I, you know, you seem like a great person, but this isn't something that I can negotiate my way through.
Yeah.
The way I could have 20 years ago when we first, because that happens in a lot of relationships early on, you know, a little bit of jealousy, you get past it. And that's what I expected to happen in that relationship, and then it didn't. And so,
and
I'm
there's,
kind of,
I mean, I don't even know if this is the right word. There's a sort of enlightened jealousy that I'm okay with. Like, if something happens with the producer and someone, and they have an interaction or whatever, and I'm like, that makes me feel jealous. I know nothing's happening, and I know it's me. But I feel that way.
Okay.
Like, and I'm not saying they should stop or anything like that, but just something. I'm like, oh man, I really want to punch that guy in the face. And I know I shouldn't, and he's done nothing wrong. And I'm not going to do that. But that to me is like, to me, jealousy is not necessarily something you have complete control over, but to be aware that jealousy is inherently irrational and something coming from you, I feel like then.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if the person was coming to me and saying, wow, you know, not that I want you to change your behavior or anything, but I felt a little jealous at this particular moment.
Yeah. When you get into shit like you should not hang out with that person, or I think you're cheating on me, or things like that, whole other monster.
Or even if that more enlightened conversation was had over and over and over again, to the point where I felt like, all right, now I'm feeling like, even though you're being sensible about this, I'm feeling pressure to change my behavior anyway.
Yeah.
And
at a certain point it becomes, because that's the thing, is you only sort of share that with your partner as almost an academic curiosity.
Yeah.
And if you keep doing it, then it's just a passive aggressive attempt to change behavior.
So you just can't, you know.
Yeah.
I feel bad about that, because like I said, you know, 25 years ago I had the emotional wherewithal to deal with that until we could work past it. But, and I'm sure for in a lot of relationships, we could work past it. But now I really just don't have the, you know, I'm not dating, so fortunately that's not an issue. But
yeah.
But if it was, I'm afraid that I would not be very tolerant of that. And not justifiably so. I think it's a little bit of baggage that I have from my past that I have a really hard time putting down. But that would be about it. I'm a very tolerant person in relationships because I want people to be tolerant toward me. So it's pretty simple.
I don't know that I'm particularly tolerant, but I don't know that I have a lot of specific... I mean, let's cover the bases here, okay? Killing members of my family would probably be a deal-breaker for most relationships, you know? Global thermal nuclear war, probably a deal. Like the obvious... You know, attempting to kill me, probably a deal breaker. Things like this.
Okay.
Killing me, a deal breaker because our relationship is over.
Yeah, you're dead.
So, I mean, we can just, let's just know somebody's going to be like, oh yeah, what if they killed your whole family? Yes, I probably would not still be romantically involved.
I did think most of those things went without saying.
It, just in case, though. This is the internet.
Okay.
So, set those out. I don't know that I'm incredibly tolerant. I think it's all very unique.
Yeah.
All of my relationships are unique.
That's right.
To the degree that I will put up with shit from you that I would not put up with from somebody else. And there's shit I won't put up with from you that and how I am in a relationship is different. I'm way meaner to you than I am to other friends. And part of that is because it's fun. And part of that is because I know how I feel about you. I know how you feel about me. I know how we think the other feels about them and what that means. So I know that me being an asshole to you in a particular way isn't a deal. And me being an asshole in that exact same way to somebody else could be traumatizing and dangerous to the relationship. In terms of romantic relationships, I mean, it's so weird to say. In romantic relationships that were short, like previous romantic relationships, sometimes I probably could have given you some. I feel like, despite the fact that I have been with Trish longer than anyone ever, by a long margin, something about that, in fact, makes it more dynamic and more, I can't say what a deal breaker would be because our relationship is always growing and changing. So, like, are there things that if she did them today could do it? Probably. They'd probably be really extreme, like killing my family or whatever. But also 3 years from now, certain things might be different than others. Like I can't imagine what would break things with us. I can't conceive of that. And I don't imagine anything.
Well, there is one more thing that I'm surprised I didn't think about until just now. There is a point where if a person's telling me things that aren't true, like if they're just everything they tell me is a lie no matter what, after a while, and it will take a while. For some reason, I'm really forgiving and tolerant about a lot of things. But after a while, obviously I'm going to be convinced, as any reasonable person would be, that this person's never going to tell me the truth. And then that would be it. I mean, what's the point of even having a relationship with a person who's lying to you all the time?
And this is interesting because you're helping me sort of articulate some stuff in my head. What I think it mostly comes down to with me in all relationships is if in general I think relating with this person, whatever the proper verb form would be there, makes me unhappy, like as a general thing. If I'm far more of the time unhappy than I am happy around them, I would want to end that relationship. Also, even if I didn't feel this, but I felt that I made them unhappy, like a sizable amount of the time, I would probably want to end the relationship as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably both of those things are probably true for me too.
Because like you said, lying, and I'm like, I can get that. I'm like, but not necessarily. Depending on the nature of the relationship, I could see a relationship where somebody just lies. I think I've had those, where somebody just lies all the time. But, I mean, about stuff, not necessarily about me to them or whatever, but But that wasn't sort of part of the nature of our relationship.
I get what you're talking about, sure.
And I mean, I'm a guy who's big on honesty, who's also really big on lying. So, and again, I think it just is unique to different relationships, what makes the relationship work. And the producer and I have had lots of unhappy times, but we've had lots more happy ones. And it makes me happy to think about being with her, and it makes me unhappy to think about not being with her.
There is a way to interpret this question in fairly subtle ways. For example, I'm sure we've both had experience, I certainly have, and you probably have too, where we have met someone or known someone even for a while, and we didn't continue interacting with that person, right? Like, didn't...
That's almost always true for me. Didn't, I have very few friends these days.
Well, and what I'm saying is a person could look at that situation and say, there are a lot of relationships that formed either for a little while or maybe even for a long while. Let's say you worked together or something. Yeah. And then there came a point where you did nothing to maintain that relationship. So in a way, you ended it.
Yeah. But that is different. That's, I mean, the sort of the exact opposite. Rather than breaking the relationship, it requires an effort to maintain, and you simply did not.
Right, but then the question can be asked, why didn't you? What's it about those people? Was there some deal-breakery thing going on there that made you say, there's no way I'm going to talk to this person again? Of course, for me, it's pretty much never like that. It's mostly
The relationship had a low bar to entry. Like, there was not a lot of energy that had to be put forth to maintain the relationship. Now there is, and the relationship is not worth that much energy.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, another part is there's already other people in my life I'm paying attention to, and this person just gets ignored almost as a, just kind of a, accidentally, so to speak. And obviously they're not trying to contact me either, or else maybe I'd go, oh, hey, yeah you. And so let's go do something together. So there's kind of a two-way street there, but also it's a, you know, a person only has so much time and so much attention, and if, like, for the last 16 years of my life, there were kids and everything, so that's why that
work
happens.
Friendships are a big one that I realized not long ago. You're the only work friend that I've sustained.
In your whole life?
Well, yeah, looking back now, the friends I have, none of them are ones I've worked with. No offense to Mark, we're still nice acquaintances, but it's not like we hang out or anything. Mm. You're it. Mm. There are some that I have maintained maybe for a year or two or worked at it a little bit or whatever, but they've all fallen by the wayside except you. You're literally the only one.
Probably because of this podcast.
I think that helps. I mean, we had maintained a friendship before for quite a while.
No, that's right.
But I think you're, I mean, this podcast definitely helps. Absolutely helps. Yeah. But
well, actually, that was one of our motivations for doing it was because...
You're right. Absolutely.
Because we knew that that would help keep us
and
in
we
touch
sort,
with one
yeah,
another.
We sort of tried to do other things to, like, force ourselves to get together periodically. And it didn't work. Honestly, I think the audience makes a huge thing here because... It didn't work because it was just the two of us, so it was so much easier to, like, cancel. But this, it's like we have a responsibility to others, so that keeps...
And we've got this record going of every single Thursday for 190
But I do
episodes.
Think it's become a habit thing such that if the podcast ended, we could probably still manage hang out once a week.
Sure
I don't think we necessarily could have at the beginning.
Well,
I think a habit has formed.
There was... You had a monthly... Was it monthly, the Gaius Feast? Was that a monthly thing?
Yeah.
The here, and then we tried to make it to as often as we could, which was...
And that kept
the kids
it going for a while, too. That's a good point.
With the kids and everything, we couldn't...
So there may be nothing special about you. It may have just been circumstances.
Well, I don't know. I think there's something special about our relationship.
No. I don't anymore. I just changed my mind.
Okay, well, you don't have to think so, but I think
luckily,
so.
Circumstances have worked. We're over time, so we should get out of here. Thank you, children, for listening. Write the hat. We always need you to write the hat with the comments and questions. Contrary to what you see here, sometimes we get through more than one. And so we need fodder, as it were. I used that word twice tonight. That's weird. So write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Things happen there. Conversations happen. It's interesting. Enjoy yourselves, won't you? You can also like us on Facebook. Mostly that's just doing us a favor at this point. You don't really get much out of it, but we like it. And really, it's a like. How difficult is that for you to do? That's about it. We will talk to you guys next week, okay?
Yep.
In space.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.